Cornelius Eady has written poems about everything from white socks to recovering from prostate cancer. He's the director of the Creative Writing Program at the University of Notre Dame and co-founded Kava Kanam, a retreat for African-American writers. His collection of poems, Brutal Imagination, was a finalist for the National Book Award in Poetry. His latest collection, Hard-Headed Weather, features new and selected poems. Some of the poems are about how different his life is from those of his working-class parents. Several of the poems in the new collection are about the two small cottages he bought with his wife as a country home and how ambivalent he was about buying a second home that was optional, knowing it was far beyond the means of anyone else in his family. Here's Eady reading his poem, Migration.
Unlike my parents, who headed north for jobs, for houses, simply because indifference was better than never. Unlike my sister and my niece, each in their gray, sometimes bullet-pocked, subsidized apartment blocks. Unlike my old neighborhood, a maze of trying you're not supposed to wiggle out of. I hold my tongue because we've just told our friend we've bought a house that doesn't need to be, and luck is so unfair, complicated, true.
Cornelius Eady, welcome to Fresh Air. So, it sounds like your sister lives in a neighborhood that sometimes has bullet holes in the houses, and your parents didn't live in a very good neighborhood, and now you've bought this house that, you know, is optional. So, do you feel like you're the person in the family who jumped to another class?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's. I know it's interesting that you phrase the question that way, because you know there's always that kind of mixed feeling of joy and guilt when you talk about crossing the class line. You know,
mm-hmm.
I come from a generation where striving was really the center of your existence. You're supposed to get out, and even though I was on the surface very resistant to the idea. I mean, you know, you see me when I was 18 or so, you definitely see someone look kind of like a hippie, right? And the idea of materialistic kind of things was sort of anathema to me to some degree. However, my life sort of led me in this direction. Writing got me out of the neighborhood. So absolutely. And it gave me an option. I guess I get one way of putting it is that my father's definition of what you were supposed to do for work, for example, was totally different than what I do for a living. You know, I mean, his idea of work was, you know, you get up in the morning, you punch a clock, and you come home. My idea of existence is sort of like, well, you know what it is to be a writer. The work of a writer is basically this.
Yeah, you have in one of your poems you write about your father. How could I make him believe that I've gotten all of this modern apartment, this pond in front of my window, from writing a few good lines?
Well, that's because my dad couldn't. You know, it's an abstraction, right? You remind me of a story about my dad. Once when one of my books came out, I came back to Rochester to do a reading. And I was sitting at home, and he asked me. He tried to figure out what a reading was. You know, what is a reading? And he tried to walk me through it. You know what I mean? It was sort of like, okay, so like somebody reads your book, and I go, yeah, right. Someone reads your book, and then they invite you to come, right? And I said, yeah, they invite you, they invite me to come, and they pay for me, and they, you know, they pay for the hotel, and they pay for the plane fare, and they, you know, and then people come. You know, they actually come, right? I said, yeah, they actually come. They read the book, and they like the book, and they all come, and they come, and they listen to you read, right? Yeah, they come, they listen to me read. And it was like he was trying, God bless him, and he was really trying to figure it out. You get paid for this? You get money for this? It was that kind of thing.
Would you describe the neighborhood you grew up in?
Oh, yeah, sure. I grew up in what used to be called the Old Third Ward in Rochester, New York. And it originally was a neighborhood that was full of Italians. And when we moved in, they moved out. It was that kind of migration. They moved to the suburbs and left their houses, and we moved into those houses. And so it was a really lovely little neighborhood. But it was a brick-lined street that was a dead-end street. When I was growing up, there was the Pennsylvania Railroad had a couple loading platforms there. One was a lumber yard, and further down was a canning plant. Around the tracks was a lot of weeds, and people, we'd play on the box cars and things like that. It was a poor neighborhood, but it was a very stable neighborhood. Everyone, you know, was getting into the idea of being able to own your own property. And in fact, that's part of the reason why my parents moved up to Rochester from Florida, was to be able to buy houses.
Some of the poems in your new collection are about the death of your father. And you write that your parents weren't married, although they lived together for 40 years. And when your father was dying, you tried to convince your mother to marry him, or else her name wouldn't be on the deed to the house. She'd lose the house. She'd lose all kinds of things. How come they weren't married?
They just never got around to doing it. I wish I could give you a good answer. You know, we never really asked either of them. I mean, they weren't, you know, into the free love or anything like that. You know, so I really can't give you. It just became probably just a matter of just the same normal day in day out sort of thing. And then you had kids, and the kids were still there, and you know, and I mean, that's my best guess. No one was leaving. You know, everyone is sort of like. Acted as if it was just a normal family, which it was in a lot of ways.
So what happened to your mother after your father died? Did she lose everything?
That's a long and complicated and sad story. My mom was schizophrenic and got worse after my father died. And she ended up her days in a nursing home, was of course, very, very upsetting to all of us. But, you know, it really was very frustrating, because as a son, what you really would like to have is a happy ending for your mother. You know, I would have loved to have her have a new life after my dad had passed, and she started to do things, have her be able to do things or be able to experience or discover things that she had never done before, like driving, for example. She never learned how to drive, or getting over her fear to be able to go out at night and go to a restaurant. You know, my mom was so housebound at a certain point that even the thought of going out the door to go to a restaurant, to a McDonald's, was a really terrifying thing for her. So, you know, that's the life as the son I wished for the mother, but it didn't happen.
You referred to yourself in one of your poems as growing up the son of the crazy lady. Was she considered the crazy lady of the neighborhood?
Yeah, she was. She was. The great thing about our neighborhood, that was a very small and cozy neighborhood, but like all small cozy neighborhoods, you also have the downside to it. And the downside to those kind of neighborhoods is that you get certain roles, right? And my mother's role was the crazy lady, you know? She was easily teased, to put it that way. And she had a sense of just what, you know, her... where the border of the house was. We have a house, and then we have a fence that was close to the street. And anybody got too close to that would be in danger of her coming out and yelling at them, right? So kids would actually go up and intentionally rattle the fence to get a rise out of her. People loved her. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that she was ostracized or anything, but people understood her in a certain, you know, context, right? And sure, being... a child of a person who has schizophrenia always causes you to worry. You know, if you're going to go the same way. My sister and I, when we were more friendlier, and we'd call each other, you know, every so often, say, "Well, are you going crazy yet? You're 29 now." You know, I started to see little signs, and we were kidding each other, of course, but also by the back of our minds, of course, there's also that little you know that worry, right? That because my mom started to go, once we started to do the math and go backwards, you know, probably around her mid to late 30s. So, you know, that's always a concern.
Since we're talking about your sister, I'm going to ask you to read a poem called How to Do. Would you introduce it for us?
Well, it's How to Do is really about a moment when I was with my sister and helping her to deliver bottles. My sister was collecting empties on the streets in order to get money.
How long ago did this incident happen that the poem was based on?
Probably somewhere back in the early 90s. And, you know, I was doing her a favor. So by doing that, I was sort of like... gotten to the world of people who are collecting stuff, but also I realized that my niece, her daughter, was very, very embarrassed by my sister's doing this. Even though, of course, it was a very practical thing to do. You know, you find, you know, from her point of view, she's being very practical, and it also ties into something that my mom always told us. You know, so how to do? It embarrasses my niece to think of her mother walking the streets with a cart, picking up empties for their deposits. But my sister knows how to do, which is all our mother asked of us. She's learned how to do, which is both a solution and a test. So I stand in line with my sister at the supermarket. Today is the best day of the week to bring the bottles in. It is a poor people's science, a concept that works until someone with power notices it works, and then it doesn't.
That's Cornelius Eady reading an excerpt of How to Do, one of the poems in his new collection, Hard-Headed Weather. He directs the creative writing program at the University of Notre Dame and co-founded Kava Kanam, which runs workshops and retreats for African-American writers. Eady will be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is poet Cornelius Eady. He's the director of the Creative Writing Program at the University of Notre Dame, and he's got a new collection of poems called Hard-Headed Weather. How did you get exposed to serious reading and writing?
Oh, I got exposed to the library. That's the quick, easiest answer. In Rochester, there's this great library called the Rundle, and when I was a kid, I would go there. Primarily because it still is. It's a beautiful building. I don't want to give the impression that my life at home was really this horrible, miserable thing. It wasn't. You know, I was a kid and I was oblivious to a lot of the pressures that was going on. I wasn't conscious to a lot of stuff until I got grown. But it was a chaotic life in a lot of ways. You know, it was five people in a very, very small house running over each other in the library. It was calm and people who would let you just take things and read them. So for me, the library was an oasis. I started writing, actually, in earnest in the library because there were reading tables there, and they sold writing tabs for 25 cents and pencils for a nickel out of little vending machines. So I was spending a lot of hours there. Having gotten to a certain point when suddenly I was being perceived at my high school as a poet, this was because of a poem I had written in the high school literary magazine about the assassination of Martin Luther King. I just did the math recently, and I realized that my writing career begins with the assassination of Martin Luther King, because that was my first real public poem that I wrote about Martin Luther King. And once people started to sort of like react to that poem, I suddenly realized I didn't know what being a poet actually was. So I started reading poetry. And there was a wonderful selection of poetry at the Rundle Library. This is when I got exposed to Neruda, to Leroy Jones, there now a Mary Baraka, to a lot of the poets that were being published by New Directions and City Light Books, and that just sort of totally changed my preconceptions or my prejudices of what I thought poetry was about.
I'd like you to end by reading a pretty funny poem called White Socks. It's a previously unpublished poem that you've included in your new collection. And by way of introduction, I'd like you to tell us to whom the white socks in this poem belonged.
Oh, thank you. You actually think there really was a real story attached to the poem. That's wonderful. You fell for it. The speaker in the poem is just a speaker in the poem, and the idea is just the idea of bad fashion, really. There's nobody that inspired the poem, unlike Neruda's Socks, that wonderful poem, The Ode to a Pair of Socks. You know, there's no real fashion victim here that I'm trying to address the poem to, but I'm glad it feels that way. I'm glad it's being addressed to you. You feel that there's something that you know sort of like sparked the poem in the first place. I was just playing with the idea, and out comes the poem. White socks. It is important to remember that there is a place for everything. Those white socks, for example, they were important maybe 20 years ago, but now they are an embarrassment. This is not meant to insult you. Some of my best friends have no taste, nor am I afraid to be seen with you. As you must know by now, I was born without fear. But listen to reason. You know we can't go anywhere with you wearing white socks. Let's talk it over. Let's clean out your dresser, and then walk shoulder to shoulder into the future.
Cornelius Eady, thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Cornelius Eadie's new collection of poems is called Hard-Headed Weather. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.